I'd like to thank everyone for coming out on this summer evening to hear a very inspiring talk by Professor Yaron Harel. The topic tonight is Jewish-Muslim relations in Syria during the 19th century. We'll finally get to meet someone that probably knows more about our heritage than we know, which is exciting. Well, many of us anyway. I'd like to thank Joey Sitt and the Sephardic Heritage Museum for sponsoring tonight's talk, and of course, Sarasen and the Center for hosting in this wonderful venue. The professor is teaches Jewish history at Bar-Ilan University, one of the foremost universities that's focused on things like Jewish history and our traditions, along with Torah and science studies. I attended Bar-Ilan for one semester and would suggest it for all those youngsters after high school. They have a great program called Tochnit Achat, which is fantastic, where you get really a good balance of Torah and general learning for the year. The professor has received numerous prizes in the field and has also authored several works that some of which he'll touch on tonight. So please, Professor.
Thank you very much. Good evening, all of you. I'm very happy to be here. I thank Rabbi Reuven Hillary for inviting me for you tonight. Ricky. Actually, I call him Ricky. I'm very happy to see all of you, and especially I'm happy to see some representatives of the young generation here. Now it's okay? Okay, better? Wonderful. So, I don't know how you imagine Jewish life in Syria during the 19th century. I think some of you see the picture, paint the picture with rose color and the other black color. So we'll talk tonight about facts. I wrote some sources and understood that some of you, or perhaps all of you, read Hebrew. If not, I'm going to translate the sources. For those of you who don't speak English, I'm going to speak simple English. Okay? Okay. To understand what's going on in Syria during the 19th century, one should understand what happened before, at the beginning of Islam. On the 7th century, Islam began. But he finds Judaism and Christianity. So he must show the world that there is something new in Islam. We want to convince as many people as possible to convert to Islam. So he takes some steps in order to do it. And he puts Jews and Christians in a very low position. The legal status of Jews and Christians in Islam is very low. Muhammad, the Prophet Muhammad, was the first to say that Jews and Christians can live under Islam and practice their religion, but they have to pay the jizya. Who speaks Arabic here?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know what jizya is. This is a poll tax. If you pay the jizya, you are safe. Nobody will hurt you. The Islam protects you. This is one condition. And the other condition that you have always to remember always, that your position is inferior to the Muslims. So now I want to read with you a letter that was written by the Sultan Omar in the 8th century. All of you have the sources in your hands? Okay. I'll read in Hebrew and then I'll translate. Thank you. זהו מכתב לעבדאללה עומר. This is a letter to עבדאללה עומר. מאת הנוצרים. The letter was written by the Christians מיושבי סוריה, the inhabitants of Syria, ומצרים and Egypt. Now I want you to understand that the status of Christians and Jews under Islam is equal. So even this letter was written by Christians, everything that is written here is true about the Jews too. Okay? כאשר עליתם עלינו, when you conquer the country, ביקשנו מכם ביטחון לנפשותנו. We asked you to protect us. ולצאצאינו ולרכושנו, and to our children and to our property. והתחייבנו, now what they are committed. והתחייבנו שלא נכונן בערינו ובסביבותיהם, לא מנזר ולא כנסייה ולא עליית גג ולא תענת זרים. We promised not to build church, any chapel, any synagogue. It's not allowed. It's not forbidden. ושלא נקים מחדש מה שחרבנו. If there were any synagogue that was destroyed by the Muslims, we promised not to build it again. To leave it as it is. Now, ושתהיינה דלתותינו פתוחות לרווחה לעוברים והשבים ולאורחי האורח, ושנארח את המוסלמים השרים אלינו שלושה ימים. We promise that our houses will be open to Muslims without pain. We commit ourselves to feed them at least for 3 days without pain. They can do anything they like in our houses. ושלא נסתיר נפקדים של המוסלמים. If one of our family converted to Islam and he wants to become Jew again, we won't hide him. We should surround him to the Muslims again. ושלא נלמד את ילדינו את הקוראן. We promised not to teach our children the Quran. ושלא נפגין את דתנו ולא נשדל מי שיקבל אותה. We won't practice our religion publicly. We won't demonstrate our religion. And we promise not to convince anybody to convert to Judaism or to Christianity. שלא נמנע איש מקרובנו מלהיכנס לדת האסלאם עם רצונו בכך. If one of our relatives want to convert to Islam, we will not prevent him to do so. ושנכבד את המוסלמים, we'll respect the Muslim. ונקום מפניהם באספתנו אם הם רוצים לשבת. If there's a Muslim here, we'll give him our place to sit and we'll stand. He has the right to sit. ושלא נדמה להם בשום דבר מבושיהם. We won't have any clothes that belong to Muslims. For example, you know that the color of the Muslim clothes was green. The Christians had yellow clothes, and the Jews, they had to wear sometimes blue, sometimes yellow. It depends. We won't put a hat, Muslim hat, on our heads. Shoes, helpers. ושלא נקרא בשמותיהם ולא נתקנא בכינוייהם. We cannot take for ourselves Muslim names. So I know many Jews from Muslim countries that call themselves Musa, Ibrahim, Yusuf. But you will never find a Jew that his name is Muhammad or Ali or Omar. It's impossible. It's forbidden. ושלא נרכב על עוקפים. We won't ride any horse. You know the Jews were allowed only to ride חמר, donkeys.
ולא נחגור חרבות ולא נסגל לעצמנו דבר בכלי הנשק ולא ניסה אותו עמנו. We can't have swords. We can't take any weapon. And you know why? Because if you pay the jizya, the portex, you don't have any weapon to defend yourself. The Muslim will defend you. He won't attack you. So why do you need any weapon? ושלא נחרות בחותמותינו כתובות בערבית. Again, we won't write any Arabic names in our signature. ושנגוז את החלק הקדמי של ראשנו. We'll cut our hair here. ושלא נראה בפומבי את צלבנו. Again, we cannot do anything in public that demonstrates our religion. And so on and so on. You know, for example, testimony of a Jew was not accepted in Muslim court, for example. And so on and so on. We can continue, but I think this is enough to understand how was the life of Jews and Christians under Islam before the 19th century. From the 7th century until the 19th century, until the middle of the 19th century. Sorry? In the 8th century. Yeah, 850. Something like that. Yes, that's what I said. Exactly. I said that in order to understand what's going on in the 19th century, one should understand what was the situation before. Okay? Now, we are coming to the 19th century. The year is 1839. The Sultan Mahmud II is dead. There is a war with Muhammad Ali, the governor of Egypt. He is going to conquer the Ottoman Empire. Now there is a young new sultan, his name is Abdul Majid. He wants to remain the sultan of the Ottoman Empire. So he asked for the help of England, of France, and they are willing to help him, but in one condition. They force him to do some reforms in the state, and especially they want him to improve the legal status of the Christians. And as I told you, the legal status of Christians and Jews is the same, so if the status of the Christians is improved, the same is the status of the Jews. So in 1839, the young Sultan Abdul Majid declared the Khatti Sharif, the Tanzimat, the reforms in the Ottoman Empire. Let us read source number 2. That's a small passage, short passage. Every distinction or designation pending to make any class, whatever of the subject of my empire, inferior to another class, on account of their religion, language, or race, shall be forever effaced from administrative protocol. The laws shall be put in force against the use of any injurious or offensive term, either among private individuals or on the part of the authorities. You see, this is an example. But the question is whether things went like this. You see, to make such a big change in the Muslim tradition and the Islam tradition towards Jews and Christians, one should educate the people before he proclaimed this kind of law. For example, look what's going on now in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in the Palestinian Authority, the West, the United States, England, France, think that it's so easy to force these societies to be a democracy. But it's not so simple. You have to educate these people for democracy. And it was the same in the 19th century. Because these reforms were forced by the European powers, only the Ottoman administrations received, but the people, they couldn't understand it. They felt insulted by this kind of law. Because, as we said, the Muslim, the Jew and the Christian should be inferior to the Muslim. So I want you to see what really happened in spite of this law. Let's read source number 3. בקרבת, this source deals with Damascus, the Jewish community of Damascus. בקרבת מקום קברות היהודים, near the Jewish cemetery, מתגורר זה ימים כבירים, איש פוחז ועריץ ושמו קורדש. Near the Jewish cemetery, there is a Muslim that is very violent. הנוגס את העדה לשלם לו מכס כאוות נפשו מכל הלוויית המת. When there's a Jewish funeral, he forced them to pay him money if they want to bury the body. This is against the law. But in spite of the law, he can do it. והוא מעריך את המסל הזה כפי שתשיג יד משפחת הנקבר לעשרה, לחמישים, למאה ולשני מאות פיאסטר. Well, he gets out of his home. And he see. If he see that the funeral is of a rich man, he says, give me $2,000. If it's poor family, okay, give me $100, $500. So, he's free to do whatever he likes. כל זעקת העדה על החמאס הזה ללא הועיל. Now the community complained to the authorities. See what's going on. In vain. In vain, in spite of the law. והוא מופת על שלטון המשפט בממלכת הישמעאלים. Now the man who writes it, wrote it, he says, you see, this is the example what is really justice in Ottoman law, in Muslim law. They say one thing, but they act in a totally different way. Let's see also source number 4, for example. Barhovot, in the streets, פונים אל הנוצרים והיהודים בגלוי, בכינוי, כופרים ארורים. In the streets, Muslims curse Jews and Christians. They call them infidels. Infidels, in French. Infidels, yeah. צעיפי נשותיהם ובנותיהם מוסרים בכוח. Now they take violently the scarf of the woman, of the daughters. והטורבן של הרב הראשי, and the hat of the chief rabbi, הוא עף מראשו ונרמס בתוך הבוץ, was thrown into the mud. This is the hat of the chief rabbi. So now we can understand why Jews tried to look like Arabs. although they couldn't wear the same clothes as the Arabs, as Muslims, they do everything that they can to imitate the Arabs, not to be identified so easily as Jews. For example, you know that in Aleppo, Jews never went in the streets with head cover. And it is also psak halacha that one should not wear a head cover. Let's see source number 5. It's in English. It will be more easier for you. Jews do not have sideburns, no peot. Yes? Because they remove them almost to the root until here, leaving a bit of hair so as to resemble the Muslims in everything. And for safety, when they travel, so that they will not be identifiable as Jews, because the Muslims shave their heads, including the sideburns up to the beard. Yes. For the religion, there is lenience regarding this process. So you see, if you walk on the street, you couldn't recognize whether this fellow was a Jew or Muslim. Why? Because the Jews were afraid to be heard by Muslims, although the law said they should be treated equally, they should be free citizens like all the other Muslims. You know, the Ottoman reform allowed Jews and Christians to do a lot of things that they couldn't do before. They could ride horses. They could have weapons upon them. They could be elected as representatives in the city council or in the region council. They could wear during the 50s, 60s, anything they want. They could rebuild the destroyed synagogues. And now we can see a big difference between the Christians and the Jews. The Christians that knew that there are many European states that can protect them, they dared to build the churches, to ride horses, to change their clothes, to have weapons with them, and sometimes even to insult Muslims. But the Jews didn't behave in the same manner. They knew the difference between the world that is on the paper and between reality. And besides, there was no any Jewish state to protect them. They couldn't lean upon any state, European state. So they continued to act humbly, not to speak too loud. They didn't build new synagogues. For example, in Aleppo, there was only the great synagogue, As-Safa, the yellow synagogue. Later, you know, in the 20th century, there were more small synagogues, like Midrash Nasi and other small synagogues in private houses. But in the 19th century, only one synagogue. The rabbis continued to wear hats, black hats, although they can wear hats in any color they would like. And when a European traveler asked one of the rabbis, "Why do you continue to wear black hat?" he said, "Zecher la'urban, I remember the destroy of Beit HaMikdash, of the temple in Jerusalem." But actually, it was because they didn't want to disturb the Muslims. They didn't want to insult the Muslims. Although, theoretically, the law was at their side. And this behavior of the Christians and of the Jews, we can see now the result of this behavior. See, please, source number 6. Gedolah, this source was written in 1859. Gedolah sinat ha-Ishmaelim ala Nutzrim me'ala Yehudim. The Muslims, they hate the Christians. They don't hate the Jews. על כי לא יעד הלב יהודי להתנסות ולהתערב במערכת הנהגת המדינה. Because the Jews don't want to enter to the administration. They don't want to be above the Muslims. But the Christians, they want to be above Muslims. That's why the Muslims began to feel hatred for the Christians. They treated them from now on like enemies. And one should remember, the Muslims always were afraid that in case of a war with Christian states from Europe, the local Christians would cooperate with the enemy, with the Christian enemy. So they were like potentially traitors. You see what I mean? Okay, understood? So if during many centuries the Muslim feelings towards Jews and Christians were equal, from the middle of the 19th century it was different. The Jews are not dangerous. They are below us, they inferior to us. But the Christians, now they are the enemy. We hate them politically. Okay, we're talking about 5,000 Jews in Damascus and 5,000 Jews in Aleppo, approximately. And we're talking about 30,000 Christians in a city, in each city, and the population was about 100,000. Okay, so you can see the proportion. Now let's see the result. We read it already. So, as I said, they hate the Christians, but they continue to treat Jews as before. Now, you can see that we are talking about a triangle of intercommunal relations. Muslims, the majority, and two minorities, the Christians and the Jews. Now, perhaps the Jews and Christians had to cooperate in order to improve their situation. But this was not the situation. Each group acted against the other minority in order to improve its status. And the Christians found a way to make the Muslims hate Jews. And we are talking about blood libel. Alilat dam. What is the meaning of blood libel? Alilat dam. Libel. Yeah. What is the meaning? They say that the Jews had a tradition to slaughter a Christian before Pesach and to use his blood in order to make the matzot for Pesach. You know, in 1840 there was the famous blood libel in Damascus, when the Jews were accused of slaughtering a Christian monk for using his blood for religious purposes, for the Pesach. And after this blood libel, we found, until the end of the 19th century, we found no less than 20 other blood libels in Aleppo and in Damascus alike. And the result is that the Muslim population started to believe that it is true, that this is how Jews behave, that they really need human blood for their religious practice. And it's amazing. In the 19th century, we find Muslim blood libels. You can't find it in any other place. Yes, please.
The original blood libel was pointing at the Jews against the Christian monks. I had read a book about that. The other blood libel that you're discussing now, did it have the Jews against Christians, or was the Jews killing Muslims for blood?
I didn't quite understand, I didn't quite hear your question.
The first blood libel.
Well,
in Damascus.
Yes.
Was against, they say that the Jews killed a Christian monk.
Yes.
When you talk about, and that the Muslims felt that this is in fact the way Jews behave, the next 20 blood libels that you're discussing in Damascus and Aleppo, were they against Christians?
No. No, Muslims accused Jews for slaughtering Muslims, for kidnapping Muslim children.
Oh,
in order to use the blood. Okay? Now we understand each other.
The first one was against the Christians, but you're saying that the next...
No, the first one was against the Jews.
The Jews, they accused the Jews of killing a Christian monk.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the blood libels that came up later, were they accusing the Jews of killing...
To kill Muslims, yes. Okay?
Thank you.
Wonderful. But as I told you, the Muslims began to hate the Christians, and they start to change the mind about this matter. So for example, in 1855 there was a blood libel against the Jews. You have a Purim after this blood libel in Aleppo. Let me remember the name. I'll remember it later. Musan. Somebody heard about it? Purim Musan? You want to tell us about it? Mes Musan. You want to tell us about it? I will tell about it? Okay. So like always, the Jews of Aleppo were accused to kidnap a small Christian boy in order to slaughter him and to use his blood for the matzah. Now, after several days, this boy was found hiding in a near village, in the house of his relatives. So, today, the Jews could go to court and complain against the Christians, but at that time they preferred to do nothing. Okay, this is behind us, let's leave it as it is. And let's see now source number 7. The Muslims didn't understand why the Jews don't take revenge from the Christians. And they say, now, וכל זקני הישמעאלים וחכמיהם and all the Muslim elders and scholars צועקים עלינו, they shout at us, מפני מה אתם מחשים? Why don't you say anything? Why you remain silent? ולא תתבעו עלבון אומה ישראלית, and you don't go to court to protect your honor, the honor of the people of Israel. אשר חשבו לקעקע ביצת צונאיהם של ישראל. You can complain in court against the Christians. וכולם כאחד, and all of the Muslims, עונים ואומרים, they say, אנחנו מוכנים ליתן עדות ברורה על כל האמור. We are ready to testify that you say the truth, that you are right and the Christians are wrong. And the hatred of the Muslims against the Christians became stronger and stronger. Now we're going to talk about the events of October 1850. In this month, Muslim mob entered some Christian neighborhoods and killed some dozens of Christians. They didn't touch even one Jew, only Christian. Why? Let's read in source number 8. I see that this source deals with other events, so I'll say something about the words in Aleppo, and then we'll see source number 8. So as I said, the Christians cited the anger of Muslims because they behave not properly according to Muslim views. Muslims felt insulted. But the Jews remained silent. They didn't take advantage of the reform, the privilege that they received from the Ottoman authorities. 10 years later, in Damascus, in July, there were another riots. When the Muslim mob entered the Christian quarter and slaughtered in 5 days about 7,000 Christians. The Christian quarter was burned down, all the churches were destroyed, women were raped, children were kidnapped and forced to become Muslims, and again a miracle. The Muslim didn't touch even one Jew. So now let's see source number 8. בשנתיים האחרונות, in the last 2 years, צויין, I remind you, the year is 1860. So he's talking about the 2 years before. In the last 2 years, צויין, כי מעשית עלילות בנוצרים והשמעת גידופים על דתם נעשו שכיחים משהיו בעבר. Which means, you can see a Muslim insult Christian in the streets, do them harm, and it became more and more every day. Yeladim yidu avanim banotzrim uvairovim bachovot. Little children throw stones on Christians and European travelers in the street. ומוסלמים מכובדים שעברו וחזו במעשה נבלה אלו לא גערו באוסיהם. And respected Muslims that saw these little children throwing stones on Christians, they said nothing. They didn't prevent them to do it. כאשר פרצה המלחמה בין הדרוזים לנוצרים, היו מעשי חציפות אלה שכיחים ביותר. At the beginning of 1860, there was civil war in Lebanon between Christians and Jews. And during this war, in Damascus, Christians were insulted more and more. אבל השלטונות לא הגבירו את ריחותם. But the authorities didn't do anything. No police, no army. So the Muslims that acted like this against Christians, they felt that the government agrees with what they are doing. The government is with us. Now we explain what the Christians did that bring the anger of the Muslim. פעמון גדול שנקבע לו מקבר בכנסייה המרונית עורר רוגז גדול. You know, for 403 years, the Christians were not allowed to ring the church bells. Only after the reform that we talked about. So now they started to ring the bells of the churches. And the Muslims were very angry about it. that felt insulted. They couldn't hear the sound of the church bells. Herr Lossasso, the Muslims were not happy to see the new Lazaristic convent that was built in Damascus. הבתים הנהדרים שבנו עשירי הנוצרים עוררו צרות עין. The Muslims were jealous to see the wonderful houses that the Christians built. ורווחתם הכללית, the prosperity of the Christians, נתתה ללבות רגשי קנאה אצל המוסלמים. The Muslims were jealous to see the prosperity of the Christians. האנשים שניהלו את ענייני הפחווה היו נוצרים. The high officers in the administrations, they were Christians. They told the Muslims what to do, how to act. הם ניהלו את החשבונות הציבוריים. They became rich, the Christians. הסוחרים הנוצרים הצליחו יותר מהמוסלמים. The Christian merchants succeeded more than the Muslims was. קיצורו של דבר, in short, בינתם וחריצותם של הראשונים נתנו את פירותיהם הטבעיים. Yes, the Christians are intelligent. They succeeded in what they are doing, but the Muslims felt insulted. כל המסיבות האלה, under these circumstances, חברו יחדיו להרגיז את המוסלמים. And the Muslims start to feel the inferior in property, in status. And that's why the events broke in the Christian quarter, but not in the Jewish, because all what you have said about the Christian behaviors, it wasn't the same in the Jewish quarter. So that's why the Muslims didn't attack the Jews. But you see, now we know that the Muslims didn't attack the Jews. At real time, the Jews couldn't know that they are not going to be attacked the same as the Christians. So they live in the shadow of a great fear. You see what I mean? Okay. And now we can explain why the Jews were saved. But at real time, the Jews had to explain to themselves why they were saved from the Muslim anger. And more than that, they have to explain it to the Christians, because the Christians said, if the Muslim didn't hurt you, it means that you were the partner, you had them. So the Jews had to explain why they were rescued. Now let's see source number 9, the explanation of the Jews. The scene is that the Muslims attack the Christian quarter. The following proclamation was made, saying that the Jews have been our brother since antiquity. That was the Muslim said, yes? And anyone who harmed them will take so much as a thread or a sandal strap will die. Don't touch the Jews. Only command the Jews to open the door to their houses and to put out water to slake the heat of the murderers and to clean their swords. Now you understand why the Christians said accuse the Jews of being partners of the Muslims. They should also mark the houses in which they dwell with their tzitzit. They have to hang the tzitzit on the wall. This reminds you of Pesach. Yes, when the Jews came out of Egypt, they had to put blood mark on the houses. So they should also mark the houses in which they dwell with the tzitzit that they wear on the corner of their clothes, so that the destroyer will not enter and smite you. They, the Muslims, further announced that any Jew in whose premises a Christian was found hiding would be put to death along with him, with the Christian. So the Jews could not hide Christians in the houses. And the Jews did so out of fear. It means they put out water for the Muslims. And the Christians, now, what the Christians are doing, the Christians imitated the Jews, borrowing prayer shawls with tzitzit. You see? They wear it upon them. When this became known to the Muslims, when the Muslims understood that Christians taking tzitzit and put on themselves, they found another way how to recognize, how to identify Jews and Christian. They said, let circumcision, yeah, to be the sign, the breed, coming upon one, a Christian, he said, I am a Jew. They immediately demanded to see the sign of circumcision. Circumcision, yes, circumcision. It's not so easy English. Breaking my teeth, you know. So you have to pull down your trousers in order to show that you're a Jew. Yeah. The covenant with our father Abraham and the bridge. And the Jews experienced a great miracle. And the miracle was even greater. For the Muslims relate that an elderly Muslim sheikh appeared and spread the word among them, warning them harshly not to speak to the Jews for either good or bad. That failure to do so would give them cause for regret. And until the present, they are unable to determine who it was. Perhaps Eliyahu Navi. Who knows? You see, they didn't understand then what we understand today. So they had to explain it as a miracle. And if the miracle is done by a Muslim sheikh, it's better. Because it's a sign from heaven, from above, to the Muslims. They saw this as well and were astonished how the Muslim had a change of heart, how great love for the Jews entered them, which had not been the case from yesterday and the day before. But let's take it one step ahead. The Jews wanted to understand why the Christians were punished. And they had their own explanation. The Christians were punished because of the blood libel of 1840. You know, The blood libel of 1840 was traumatic for the Jews of Damascus. Most of the leaders of the community were imprisoned. Some of them died in prison. The son of the chief rabbi at that time was Rabbi Jacob Antebi, but before him the chief rabbi was Chaim Nissim Abul Afia. He later became the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, the Rishon LeZion. His son was a Torah scholar, Musa Abul Afia. He converted to Islam. And he's not only converted to Islam, he testified against the Jews, against his brothers, and he said in court that it is true that in the Talmud the Jews, it's written that the Jews must use blood to make them a thoughtful person. And you know, there was a trial, and some of the Jews were sentenced to death, but with the intervention of the Jewish communities in Europe, I remind some names like Moses Montefiore and Adolf Cremier from Paris. Later he became the president of Alliance, Alliance Israelite Universelle. So they managed to put the accused Jews outside of jail. But there was no any rehabilitation. So all the Muslim world, and of course the Christians, believed that the Jews really do these kind of things, but because of the power of the brothers in Europe, they managed to escape punishment. So it was very traumatic. And that's why the Jews in Damascus in 1860 explained the attack on the Christians as a punishment from heaven on what the Christians did to them in 1840. You want to ask something? Yes.
That trial was in 1840?
Yes. Yeah. Let's read together source number 10. This is a piyut. You know what piyut is? Song. Religious song that was written by one of the Torah scholars in Damascus, Rabbi Mahdi, Musa Mahdi. Sing praises to God for the deliverance of the Jews when the Christian seed fell in the hands of Ishmael, it means the Muslims, of course. They killed many and took the children captive, carrying out atrocities against the women and children in God's eye. They exalted the everlasting one on high. Remember the libel of Thomas. This is the blood libel of 1840. The name of the monk that the Jews was accused of slaughtering him was Thomas. Thomaso. Exert vengeance of them. The vengeance of the people of Israel. The idols were burned. The priests cursed. They fainted in the streets under the banner of Ishmael, of the Muslims. The blood was spilled out on the ground. The foreskin severed in his mouth they placed. It's very cruelty. Listen, you know that in Israel we had several wars against Arab states. Several times we found our soldiers in the same position. Very cruelty. The severed foreskin of the chieftain of Magdiel. God is my strength and my stronghold, a refuge to the children of Israel. You see? So I must say that although according to my research, the Jews didn't really take a part in the attacks against the Christians, I can say that they were not happy to see what happened to the Christians. We are coming to the end, and I want to talk about one more thing. Conversion. Was there any conversion to Islam in Syria? It wasn't so easy to convert to Islam, because even the Muslims didn't accept everyone. We find more women that convert to Islam by marriage. You see, for example, if there was a Jew husband that used to beat his wife, she sometimes escaped to the Muslim court and said, I want to become Muslim. And when she became Muslim, her husband can't do anything to her. And in this case, immediately the Qadi, the Muslim judge, married her to a Muslim. Although there were many temptations to become Muslim, I didn't find many cases of conversion, but I want to read with you the last source about seducing young Jewish fellows to become Muslims. The source that we are going to read now was written by the chief rabbi of Aleppo, Rabbi Avraham Antebi. Yes. Yes.
When the women went to convert,
yeah.
Were the husband punished?
Oh, he wasn't punished. She became a Muslim, she received a new husband, and that's all. The Jewish community cannot do anything about it. And listen, here you can see again what is justice under the Ottoman law. Islam is above all. Although the law is secular, if it doesn't fit the law of Islam, the Islam wins. So let's read it together. The rabbi, the chief rabbi of Aleppo, writes, Od ra'iti ra'a chola ba'aretz hazot. I saw a very bad thing in our community, in our city. She'en shum melacha b'yad ha'yudim. There are no Jewish artisans. They don't work. וכל המלאכות הם ביד נוכרים. It's only Gentiles, Muslims, Christians, they are artisans, not the Jews. ומעט מן המעט, only few Jews, שיש בידם מלאכה, we found some barbers, some carpenters, but not many. ומפני זה, and because of this, אם ימצא, ימצא איזה אדם, if a Jewish father, one that his son will learn to be a carpenter or barber or anything like this, מוכרח אז להוליכו להניחו אצל הנוכרים. You see, there were no schools to teach a profession like this. So you take your child to a Muslim barber and ask him to teach the boy. You pay him something and he should teach the boy what to do. ולדעתי, and according to my opinion, writes the rabbi, שמלבד שדבר זה אסור מדינה וראו למחות בהם, it is forbidden by the Jewish law, because they were afraid of homosexualism at that time. אלא גם אהבי כאילו איבדו לבניהם בידיהם מחיי עולם הזה ועולם הבא. You take your son and you put it in Gehenom, in hell. Why? Dema yaaseh haben velo yecheta. You put him to work together with Muslim. He learned everything from the Muslim. He is not with a Jewish company. He has not Jewish friends. Only Muslims. הוודאי מלבד שחשודים על דבר אחר, that's what I said before, we suspect them for homosexualism, the Muslims, אלא גם לומד ממעשיו מקדנותו. Since he's a young boy, he learned everything from a Muslim. And he's doing the same. וסופו להיות רשע גמור. And he will end badly. Doing evil. מוטב לו לזה הבן שנהפכה שלייתו על פניו ואל יבוא לידי כך. It would be better that he would never be a born at all than living his life like this. ויותר טוב היה לו לאביו להניחו לחזר על הפתחים ולא הביא לידי כך. His father, it would be better to let him be a beggar, to ask for money from people in the streets, than to teach him profession, any profession, by a Muslim. Oy lo la'av shegorem livno shehitgadel begidulim ra'im. Okay. Now we are coming to the point. Shekama vekama ra'inu iladim, we saw some children, some boys, they were perfect, they were innocent, but al yedei yeshivatam etzel hanochrim, because they spent many hours, many days, many weeks with the Muslims, me'mirim datam ba'avotar, they convert to Islam. למה? Why? ובכל יום ויום מסיתם המלמד שלהם, because their patron seduce them, tempt them every day. Why don't you become a Muslim? Listen, if you become a Muslim, you go straight to heaven. 72 virgins. Huh? Not all of them. ומפתה אותם בממון. He say, if you convert to Islam, I'll pay you. I'll give you a lot of money. ועושים רצונו של האדון והמלמד שלהם. And they want to please him, so they convert. ודבר זה מוטל על חכמי ופרנסי הדור. And the conclusion is that the leader of the community and the rabbis should prevent fathers from putting their children
to Muslims. Thanks.
So, yes. Yes. Actually, I am talking until the 80s. Yes.
Before that period of time, were they merchants and were they artisans and were they businessmen and doctors? Was that part of the community?
Most of them were merchants.
Were merchants.
But small merchants, you know?
Yes, and they had individual stores or whatever.
Yeah. There were, let's say, many Jews were peddlers in the villages around Aleppo. They used to leave their houses, their homes on Sunday. Peddlers, yeah?
Peddlers.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. And
go
around, yes, and return to their home for Shabbat. Yeah, yes.
The question I have is the community as a whole,
This was never the situation in Aleppo. And not in Damascus, and not in Damascus, and not in any other community in the Middle East. No, not at all. Most of the Torah scholars, they also had a profession. They used to walk the first half of the day and to learn on the second half. But the community was willing to pay a small list of Torah scholars. Let's say about 10, 20, sometimes 30. This doesn't mean they didn't work. They work, but they received also, yes, from the community. And it was only limited number of Torah scholars. The idea of supporting Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars, that all that they do is to learn, it's an Ashkenazic idea. It's not Sephardic. It's not Sephardic at all. But this is what, that's why I'm emphasizing that I'm talking about the 19th century. In the 20th century, even the Torah scholars of Aleppo, especially when they immigrate to Jerusalem and meet Ashkenazic Torah scholar. So if you want to hear more about it, on Shabbat I'm going to speak about it in Manhattan. So if you want to come, be my guest. Good place, huh? Okay. So I want to conclude. You see, after all, I meet you here in the United States, not in Syria. That means that your fathers came to the conclusion that their future is not in Syria. Although that the status slowly but surely, especially when we're talking about a legal status, it was improved. I can't say that it wasn't improved, but the economic situation was very bad, and they decided to immigrate. But I want to say something, I think, very important. Let us not forget that 6 million Jews were executed not on Islamic territory but on Christian territory in Europe. You see what I mean? And this is a very important thing to remember. Thank you very much. Yes. Why not?
Ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know, I have a copy of Yaron Harel's book here. We plan on ordering a few from the publisher, have them at Makor, or maybe here at the center if anybody's interested. And if you show a hand, we can order them accordingly. If anybody's very interested in the book, I've read about a third of it so far. So,
very simple English. Don't be worried.
I like
to have one. Oh, I saw you on the story today.